get her then, please.
Okay, we have a quorum present, and the first item that we have would be the minutes of April 24th. Representative Huntley, you were the 13th person to enter the room. Did you look at the minutes?
Well, they're perfect.
Okay, Representative Huntley moves the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The first bill on the agenda, is House File 1116 by Representative Dill, the Game and Fish Bill. And so if we can get, let's see, Representative Wagenius, if you could move the division report. Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Wagenius? Okay, that motion is before us. Representative Dill, if you want to explain the bill, and then we'll go to amendments.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. House File 1116, Game and Fish Bill, has provisions from both the Department of Natural Resources and also many bills that were presented, bills or amendments that were presented to the committee in the process, totaling about 22 or 23 different bills that have been incorporated into this. There are the primary fiscal matters are in Section 3 of the bill. It allows the commissioner to establish fees for use of wildlife management areas and aquatic management areas, so that if there's someone who wants to use those for, like, let's say, field trials or things of that nature, they can establish a proper fee. Section 5, and the fee is not, as I understand it, not to either raise revenue or to lose revenue. It's a revenue-neutral fee thing. Section 5 allows for when you buy a pheasant or a duck or any of the stamps that we have for game, if they're over and above the license, the small game license, it's an endorsement that's on the license. And then you can, you then later can tell the department, or at that time you can tell the department that you want the actual stamp. And Section 5 of the bill allows for a $2 fee for the department to send the actual stamp to the person with the license. And as I recall, they have to do that within 30 days. Is that right, Mr. Bogus? And just stop me if you have any questions, Mr. Chair, on this on these sections. Section 10 reduces the non-resident rate for persons between the age of 16 and 17 from $12.50 to $6 to take small game. It's a provision that is to encourage people to come to the area, non-residents, and participate in hunting. One of the things that was the driving factor behind that is that you're a grandpa, you live up in Two Harbors, and your grandson lives over in Superior. He can come and get the, as long as they're youth, in that age group, they can get the resident rate. Section 11 allows a spouse of a military personnel on active duty, even if she's not, or even if that person is not a resident of the state, to get a resident license while the active military person is on duty. And Section 12 adds trapping. This was a Hackbarth provision. Adds trapping to the lifetime small game license and makes it retroactive to the beginning of when the lifetime licenses were issued, which in the bill I think is in 2001. Had a small, about $2,500 in impact to the fishing, Game and Fish Fund. Section 15 eliminates the non-resident archery reciprocity fee. This was a Pulaski provision. And what we had was is that if you were a non-resident coming into the state, you had to pay $137 or $135 for an archery fee to hunt deer in this state. It now makes it the same as the resident fee. It was a retaliatory type thing. We are eliminating that. Section 7 reduces the rate for non-resident youth ages 12 to 18 for the from the $135 that I said a few minutes ago because they were non-resident. Same thing as the Pulaski. bill to down to the youth rate of $13. Section 8, section 16 is eliminated from the bill in the fiscal note. It's not incorporated in the engrossment, the second engrossment. That had a $255,000 cost. So when you read the fiscal note, the one that's before you, would have to deduct that $255,000 from the total, and that would get us down to a total state cost of $86,000. We removed that from the bill. It wasn't that the policy of that particular, that was a Hackbarth provision. We agreed with the policy of that provision, but when working with Representative Wagenius, we just didn't feel that we could carry that as a minus number in the Game and Fish Fund at this time. Section 9 of the bill is also eliminated, or I'm sorry, Section 33 of the bill is also removed from the bill as it's currently engrossed, and is being carried by Representative Wagenius in her Omnibus Environment and Natural Resources bill, which is now in conference committee. That had to do with fishing contest fees, and we removed it from this since it had fees and put it over into her bill. And then Section 46 instructs, this was a Hackbarth provision, instructs the commissioner to create a walk-in access plan that must be submitted to the legislature in 2008. Those are the primary fiscal implications of the bill. As I said, with the $255,000 removed for the eliminating the spearing license, it gets the net cost down to $86,000 to the Game and Fish Fund. Question. I'm willing to answer questions.
Are there any questions at this point before we move to amendments of Representative Dill? Seeing none, Representative Dill, I have in the packet an amendment that you've requested, H1196A1. So the chair would move that amendment. That's the one, Representative Dill. My notes say allows a hunter to produce a hunting license after the fact.
Right. What is happening, Mr. Chairman, is that a person that goes hunting forgets their billfold in their hunting shack or forgets the license for whatever reason is given a citation. Driver's licenses, you're allowed to produce the driver's license and then there is no citation. If you can produce your driver's license. And that's basically what this does, is it makes it similar to the driver's license, that you're giving satisfactory proof at the time of the arrest that the person was validly licensed. So maybe Mr. Bogus would like to comment on this particular provision. This is in the Senate. It's in the Senate provisions already, and I'm just trying to get it in the House provisions.
Mr. Bogus.
Mr. Chair, members, Ed Bogus, Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife for Department of Natural Resources, and Representative Dill's correct. This, I think, exact language is in the Senate version of the bill, and I know our enforcement division has been looking at this language and is aware of it. My understanding is that it is similar to the driver's license language. I know Captain Conrad is here today, and I don't know if he has any thoughts on if we have concerns about the exact wording of this language. I guess I would ask him to let the committee know if we've got some concerns.
And if you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee, I'm Captain Conrad, Administrative Manager, Division of Enforcement. We don't have any particular concerns with the intent behind it. The language would prevent us from issuing that citation. In other words, if we issued it, the individual would not be considered guilty if he produced that license. Currently, the only concern that we have is that on occasion we do cite individuals for that violation as a lesser included offense to somebody who has no license. And that would give us take away our opportunity to get somebody a break. And that would be our only concern.
Okay. Representative Cornish, you had your hand up.
Mr. Chair, remember, just probably the result, I don't have any big problem with the amendment. It probably resulted from somebody getting pinched somewhere and complaining and bringing it up. But just to let the members know that it's a real pain in the Nick Easter, when you're out there, and I was up in Representative Dill's area once to work in fishermen, and I bet you there was 7 different boats that we had to run all the way back to the cabin, and it took us hours, the game warden and I up there, and time and expense, and because they didn't have their license on, it was in the cabin, and we didn't want to give them a ticket. And so you have to go all the way back, and it's a waste of time and expense. But I don't have any problem. As long as the officer, Representative Dill, when you go to conference, if you could just keep it like it is and allow the officer to issue the citation and then prove that they have one later. And just, I heard that when this started out, they had the law was going to be changed to prohibit the writing of a citation. At least we could write in the citation. And it's especially helpful. I run into a guy on a lake once, the third year in a row in the same sandbar. He didn't have his license. Finally, I said, enough of this baloney, and I wrote him a ticket, and it cost him $50, and he never forgot it again. So it's kind of nice to have it as an option. So if you could keep it in this form, it would be great.
Mr. Chairman, well, I think, whenever we get into these enforcement things, it's murky for me, but I think it says a person charged with violating the license requirement shall not be convicted. So that means, you can charge them, you can issue them a citation, but they can't be convicted. Now, if they pay the fine, they admit that they're guilty. If they go to court, they can show the judge the license, or if they show you, must be able to fix the ticket.
And Mr. Chair, the advantage the conservation has out in the boat now, if you're not in the cell phone. And if you're a regular cop in a squad car, you can do what they call a 1045 check, and you can tell if a person does have a license, they don't have one. And you're out there in the middle of nowhere, and you haven't got a cell phone to call into the license center, there's no way to tell if they have one. That's sometimes why they have to issue the ticket. But hopefully the 99% of them will use good discretion out there, and the one person that isn't doing it won't screw it up for everybody.
Okay, any further discussion on the author's amendment? Hearing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The next one is H116A13, and I have Representative Wagenius' name on it. Representative Wagenius?
Thank you, Chair and members. This was...
if you could move the amendment.
Yes, I would move the amendment and tell you that it was given to me by Representative Moe. And what he described to me was the situation where there is somebody who's regularly hunted, and a neighbor moves in and has a house next door now and does bathing, and which not supposed to do. So that precludes the hunter who's always hunted on his or her own land from hunting. And so this makes an exception and says that that adjacent landowner, and this is the one that's always been able to hunt, who has not participated or agreed to the feeding of wildlife on the land from taking a deer on his own land. So it's a fairly straightforward amendment, and I hope you all would support it.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, Representative Regenius, if I'm not going to oppose this amendment, I don't think the DNR is outright, but if you would just keep an eye on this in future years as we come, if the problems start to develop, because what this amendment will do is allow collusion between two landowners. In other words, somebody's going to put out a bait, and the person right across the fence is going to be able to hunt now right across from the bait, and I don't know how often that's going to happen or if it is, but if it does start and have to come back and it is a problem, if you keep your mind open to possibly changing that back, I see problems that might develop, but I also see problems that somebody causes. If this guy's had a stand there across the fence for years and years, his favorite stand, and this guy puts a bait on his side, and that precludes that person from hunting that stand, so I can see the reason for the amendment, but just future problems maybe to keep an eye on.
Representative Dill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Cornish and I always struggle with these issues on the various committees, and it does say on line 10 and 11, it says an adjacent landowner who has not participated or agreed in the feeding, and I like to think that most people are law-abiding citizens, and that I'm sure there are a few that will exploit this. And I'm in agreement with, I worked with the author on this, Representative Lagunias as well, to tighten this language down from its original drafting, Mr. Helen. And I think that we have it fixed for the time being. And I think I'd like to have this amendment put on the bill.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Next amendment is A070877, and Representative Rukavina's name is on the amendment. Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I've been trying to help one of my constituents out for several years who has a history of coronary artery disease and chronic angina, and is unable to walk any significant distance because of that, but he evidently doesn't qualify for, I'm looking for his email here, for being able to go deer hunting and shoot from the car because he isn't on oxygen, or he doesn't, you know, isn't on crutches and can actually walk. But like I said, he can't walk any distance at all. So I had a bill in this year, and I had a hearing in Representative Bill's committee, and the DNR has concerns about this, but I think that the language is pretty tight here, as you can see it. And I have a letter from this gentleman's doctor saying that he has a history of coronary artery disease and because of his medical condition isn't able to walk any significant distances, particularly here in the woods, and I think he would qualify for handicap license. But for some reason he hasn't been able to get it. By the way, Dr. Whiting is a really good guy who I don't think would be making this up, but maybe Mr. Meyer can... Oh, he's already up there, ready to go. Okay.
Mr. Meyer, apparently Representative Rukavina is looking for your response. If you could identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. The amendment that you have in front of you is accurately described by Representative Rukavina. When it was heard, we did say we would try to work with them to come up with a solution for this issue. Unfortunately, we can't. Adding the words chronic into this section of law really opens it up wide open, allowing a person with any chronic physical disability that is more substantial than discomfort from walking and then unable to walk a distance because of a permanent chronic lung, heart, or internal disease, we might as well just allow people to hunt out of their cars if that's the case. These permits are for people to discharge firearms out of a motor vehicle. We do issue them in specific circumstances. It is the individual, Representative Rukavina, discusses could take a lawn chair and sit right outside of his car and hunt right there. It's the sitting in the car versus sitting outside of the car issue. This section of law is one that was put into place by a group called Capable Partners to deal with the permanently disabled or people who can't hunt. This is probably their only way they can get into the woods. We would oppose this in any form. We need to keep this for what it is, the people who are permanently disabled because of lung, heart, or other internal diseases. I wish there was an easy solution, Mr. Chair and members. There just isn't.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Rukavina.
So, Mr. Myers, this guy has, as his doctor says, history of coronary artery disease and chronic angina. Why doesn't he qualify under the current law then?
Mr. Chair, members, you'll see on lines 1.13, the stricken language, this is really the qualification or what is the defining line in this section. That requires the person to use supplemental oxygen to assist breathing. Now, that is a fine line in a person's medical condition. If you need supplemental oxygen, you aren't able to walk. Representative Rukavina, that is the issue. Your constituent does not have the need for supplemental oxygen, as far as I can tell, looking into the situation.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Meyer, but he doesn't need oxygen, but he still can't walk any distance because of his heart and I believe it's lung, cause it's, you know, coronary artery, whatever that is. Neither you or I are doctors, but you make a bureaucratic decision, and I am trying to correct that. I've just asked you for years to try to help this guy, but you, and even as you indicated, you said we'd work on it, but we had a meeting after the hearing at the top of the railing up there, and that was about the end of it, so... I don't think it opens it up. If I remove the deleted language and left the chronic in there, would he qualify, Mr. Meyer? According to whoever makes these determinations,
Mr. Chair, Representative Ruth Levine, no, because that is your decision does not need supplemental oxygen. And I did sit down and I had some lengthy meetings with our enforcement division and Roger Hauck from Capable Partners, trying to figure out a workable solution to this issue, and I just couldn't find one. Sometimes there are issues that we can't come up with a resolution for, Representative Rukavina, and this is one of them.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm looking. Maybe I'll look for this frightening as in the AC for some common sense advice from Representative Cornish.
Well, I'm just going to ask if there's any further discussions. So, Representative Cornish?
Just to give you some of the background, they struggled this for years, but the bottom line is if you're able to step from the vehicle, you should be able to step out and get into a chair. This is supposed to be reserved for people that are truly physically disabled. And the reason they put the part of the oxygen there is to say if you've got oxygen, well, then it's not realistic to be able to drag that out and get the oxygen meter and the valves and the cold air, and so that's why they've got that in there. But I've got a brother in a wheelchair that's paralyzed from the shoulders down. What we do is put him in a 4x8 sheet foot of plywood, and we turn him, and he's gotten here like 3 years in a row. And so this is really meant for the people that really have to sit, and it's still abused amazingly. Even when we give the permits to people to shoot from the vehicles, I think the first two tickets I ever wrote were, and then a farmer turned in a guy and went out there and he was in a wheelchair. He was in his car. He stopped right in the middle of the road, shot over the no trespassing sign. And so even when we tighten it up, it's still abuse. And so that's kind of the background. It's almost impossible to fashion any way to help your constituent, because it's meant if you can step out of your car and walk 10 feet and sit in a chair, that's what you should do instead of shooting out the window of the car. So that's some of the background.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, just to remind the committee, we are the dog that should wag the tail, not the tail that should wag the dog, and so our we can decide to make this change, and if we do, the agency's job is to enforce it or implement laws the way we change them. So I think we should keep that in mind as well. Representative Rukavina, I think I'll support your amendment.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, and I'm going to take you deer hunting again.
Representative Junkie.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I support this amendment, too, and I think, actually the deletion of the part with oxygen is the part that makes the most sense here, because your argument that you can get out and sit in a chair, you can do that with a tank of oxygen, too. People walk around the Capitol with tanks of oxygen, so I don't understand why that's in there anyway. That's not an argument for this at all. So I don't know what the chronic part has to do with it, but I definitely think we should delete the oxygen requirement, because that's a meaningless argument that if you can get out of the car and sit in a chair, well, you can do that with a tank of oxygen, too. So I don't even know why that's in law as a qualifier. So I support Representative Rukavina on this, and maybe then they will start working with you if this moves forward.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Representative Junkie. You go to the mall, and I see people walking around all the time carrying a small tank of oxygen. Go to the casino, you see them walking around carrying a tank of oxygen. I think the fact that the DNR is using that as their requirement is just not called for. And like Representative Westrom said, if the DNR can't come up with a better reason, then it's our job to come up with a reason, and I support Representative Rukavina.
Representative Cornish.
Just so everybody doesn't get the idea that it's the big, bad DNR doing this, the committee that advises had a disabled person in a wheelchair and a person with a heart condition and capable partners that take the people that are disabled hunting. It wasn't the DNR that made these onerous regulations. And the reason the thing in the oxygen is in there is to give the guy the oxygen a break. Up until that time, a person with oxygen, it was put in there to specially give them a break so that they would qualify. It wasn't meant to be mean to the people that have oxygen. It's just to allow them to have the permit, too. So it just to give you an idea, this wasn't the DNR bureaucratic decision. It was a combination of a committee they put together of disabled people to make the decision so we wouldn't take the heat.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Junkie.
Just one more thing, too, is read down in B. It also requires a physician's note qualifying that this person is unable to walk any distance or anything. So, again, I think, and this person had that, so again, I think if you take, DNR is saying he didn't qualify because of the oxygen, if you take that out, couple that with the physician's note that this guy has, then he should qualify for this statutory exemption and be able to hunt from the vehicle. So, you know, this still requires a physician's note, and I think we ought to leave it up to the physicians of this state to decide if someone can walk into the woods or not.
Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none then, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. The next amendment is H1116A12, Representative Cornish. And by the way, when you look at that amendment, members, line 23 should be struck and it should be line 26. So it should read page 10, line 26. If you want to make that adjustment on the amendment, Representative Cornish?
Well, members, what this is people want to go out and hunt with the electronic or with a game caller.
Do you want to move the amendment?
Yeah, I'd like to move amendment A12.
Motion is before us, Representative Cornish.
What this is people right now can hunt on certain type of species with a game caller, and what they usually use is a mouth caller. You blow through it, it makes a squeaking noise, the predator comes in, you shoot them, and they've been doing this for years and years. The problem that came about was a wired device, electronic device that is hardwired. In other words, you're sitting here with a control and it's got a wire going out to the speaker, was allowed. But because of laws in there regulating the use of electronics while you're hunting, like two-way radios and a radio communication or radio signals, it prohibits them from doing this. So what we would like to do is they've already made an exception for certain animals. What we would like to do is like it says, page 10, line 26, after fox, changed before was fox and coyote. What we'd like to do is, after fox, insert crows, bobcat, and raccoon. There's a DFL Senator, Kathy Sharon, carrying it in the Senate, and in the bill over there that has made the change, and requesting that we carry it over here and make the change and add crows, bobcat, and raccoon. In talking to the DNR, I believe you can ask them, but they'll have no impact on the bobcat population. And to allow this type of hunting on crows, bobcat, or raccoon, and all we're doing is allowing, instead of the hardwire, just allowing somebody to use a remote control. So you can put the speaker out and control it by remote instead of having a wire to it. So it's not a monumental change in the law.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion, Representative Dill?
We're good with it, Department. We can deal with it.
Okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. That's all the amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Pardon?
Have one oral amendment.
Oh, you do have one oral amendment. Okay, what?
Page 18. Line 23, it's in section 49 under crossbow season report.
Just go a little bit slower so we're able to get...
Page 18.
Okay.
line 23. The oral amendment, Mr. Chair, would be to remove the words poaching or other. And that came from Mr. Helen to clean this language up. And it would then read, and the addresses where there was an increase in hunting problems. So we would be removing poaching or other.
Okay, that well, the chair moves the amendment on behalf of the author, and any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Is that it, Representative Bill, then?
That is it, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Then the Representative Guineas would renew her motion that House File 1116, the second committee engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Dill, you've got the next bill on the agenda as well, 904.
Yep. First thing I come in from the range before you actually get into the...
And Representative Wagenius, if you'd move the division report.
Yes, I will. I'll move the Environment and Natural Resources Division report for House File 904, Second Committee Engrossment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Wagenius?
Yes, I'll move House File 904, Second Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Dill, if you would explain the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This is the lands bill at this time, members. The bill before you has each of the provisions have to do with land in the state and the conveyances, adjustments that have been requested by both the department and by local units of government and legislators on behalf of constituents. All the provisions in the bill have been approved as it is currently engrossed under the second committee engrossment, have been approved by the Department of Natural Resources. The fiscal note has primarily shows the costs of income and expenses that have to do with those transfers of land between agencies between the state and your local government. If you have a specific question about one of the provisions or a transfer, we can answer that individually. I think that would be an easier way to approach this. As I said, each and every one of these has been reviewed by the Department of Lands and Minerals, by the department at this point, and as it's engrossed and we're ready to move forward with the bill. There is one provision in here that maybe Representative Solberg would like to speak to. I think he's in here.
He must have temporarily stepped out, but we've got some other issues that he may be back by the time we...
It is non-controversial, but I just thought maybe he would like to speak to it with that. Answer any questions on the bill. We have the resource people here to help with these questions. Some of them are somewhat technical. And with that, then I would be prepared to go to amendments.
Okay. Are there any questions at this point before we go to amendments, Representative Walls?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dill, I just asked Representative Simon if there were any problems with Section 2, the data practices issue that's in this bill. He indicates there are not. However, could you or maybe staff tell me there's a reference here to Section 84.0272 in terms of how we determine value? And we're deleting some language about what a landowner is to receive from the department and saying that it has to be done consistent with that statute. So just a little comfort that landowners are still getting the information that they ought to have as we're doing these types of sales.
Same deal.
Well, actually, you are correct, Representative Folger, deleting some language but putting in better language for the landowner. Actually, right now, the way I understand it is that the landowner, the information that comes from the appraisal is not given to the landowner prior to the time that that it is that the price is negotiated. And now, under the new language, they will be able to see what the appraisal was. And maybe Ms. Lewis is here from the department, and she can be more specific as to those this has come up in every committee, and once the explanation has been given, the problem has been, there hasn't been a problem.
Ms. Lewis, if you could identify yourself.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kathy Lewis with the Division of Lands and Minerals, DNR. The 84.0272 is the Landowner Bill of Rights, and it's provisions regarding how the DNR must work with the landowners, their willing sellers of land to the DNR, and also the rights the landowners have. And what we found last year is we found that there's just a conflict between two laws. The Landowner Bill of Rights provides that we provide the value information to the landowner when we're negotiating with them, so they know the appraised value. The Minnesota Data Practices Act provides that appraisal data is protected non-public data until the parties enter an agreement. And so that would provide that we could not provide the appraised value to the landowners. And we identified which law, this is an issue of which law controls, the specific or the general. And the purpose of this amendment is to make clear that the Landowner Bill of Rights will control the situation, and when we're working with willing sellers, we provide them the appraised value.
Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lewis, thank you for the explanation. Representative Deal, good provision. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Siefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Deal, on page one, in terms of appraisal of land, we're moving the threshold from 5,000 to 100,000, and I know down in my area, 100,000 probably buy you about, 12, yeah, well, no, not a whole lot, actually. I mean, we're $4,000 an acre now for farm sales. So what was the methodology in jumping it up from, to me that seems like a 20 times greater of a threshold, seems to be a big jump. Was there some type of a methodology used in that?
Representative Gill.
Again, Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, this is another item that has come up in every committee, and rather than me giving it, I'll have Ms. Lewis explain the very the nuances of how we arrived at that figure.
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the land valuation process, you don't see 84.0272 subdivision 4 because that's not being amended, and that provides that the landowner must agree to this process, so that's not being changed. And what it is provide is that the minimal valuation process is a process where it's like an abbreviated appraisal. It makes the process go a little bit faster for the landowner. What we have been doing is under land sales, the value has been $50,000. So we've had a period of time now of testing this minimal valuation process, comparing it to appraisals, and found it is a very accurate type of analysis. And we feel that going up to $100,000 would be a fair decision. And then, again, the landowners have to agree to doing this as opposed to a full appraisal.
Representative Seifert, set.
Well, I mean, Mr. Chair, I can see if you have an eager person trying to dump a couple acres of land that, you know, they'd be very agreeable to selling at, you know, an agreed-upon price. I guess I'm looking out for, on the taxpayer side of things, that just seems to be an awfully high threshold without an appraisal that DNR could say, you know, we really want that 2 acres of land and we're willing to pay $99,000. Now maybe it's only worth $50,000, but we don't have to go through the appraisal process like we used to. I think going that high of a jump just to me doesn't seem, I mean, I could even see $50,000, but going to $100,000 seems to be an awfully high threshold for what I'm comfortable in doing. I think in some cases the landowner would be very eager to be dealing on something like this, but to me that the threshold seems awfully high, and I just I don't feel real comfortable moving it up to that in one jump anyway.
Okay, any other questions on the bill before we go to amendments? Representative Wagenius.
Perhaps to follow up on the previous question, we could just ask how many parcels would fall into or have fallen into the category on subdivision 1 and how many you would expect to fall into that subdivision.
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Guineas, currently at the $5,000 level, we're just capturing probably 2 or 3 parcels a year. If you look at the last year for parcels under $100,000, it would be about 38. The issue, though, is you wouldn't send 38 for this process because you would say it's somewhat close and you wouldn't do the mineral evaluation process. The process does go through most of the steps you do for a full appraisal. It goes out and looks at zoning. It looks at comparable sales. It looks at assessed value type of information. It doesn't write up a long report, but it is most of the basic steps of doing the appraisal work in the process.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, either for Ms. Lewis or Representative Dill. I notice in here there are two Cass County transactions, and the first one, I'm curious as to why the commissioner can sell land, it looks like a portion of Bear Island, to the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwa for less than the value of the land, and that they, and it's okay to do that if it's used for public purposes. I guess, do either of you know the intent of what they're going to do with the land and why it can't remain in public use now?
Here, could we get the paper where he's at in the bill?
Oh, I'm sorry, top of page 9.
Page 9.
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Lewis?
Thank you. The Cass County parcel sale to the Leech Lake Band is the reservation land borders on two sides of this lot. It has cultural significance to the band. It has some evidence also of archaeology issues pertaining to the band. It is a site on an island, so the DNR is not actively managing the property. The band would have to be committing to keeping it open for public use, so they would be managing the site. And it also includes a conservation restriction to ensure that the property is maintained as open space. So we feel this is a good use of state resources, like maintaining the land for public use.
Okay, Representative Simon?
Yes, either for the author or for the testifier, I'm not knowledgeable about these issues. That's the first thing I'll say. Is this bill, is it usually the within the purview of your committee to carve out specific, or how should I put it? Can you and your committee basically force the DNR to give up certain lands?
Representative Dell?
I mean, is that done legislatively?
Well, I know there have been times that the DNR and the committees and the legislature have disagreed, and if it's the will of the legislature, then we can pass a law to do that. Representative Riccobina is somewhat famous for those types of amendments. And we may see a little bit of that yet to come today. I think that's the best answer that I can give. We do direct, the DNR does work for the legislature, and we set the laws that they must abide by. So I suppose that in the terms of your question, we could, in fact, force them against their will to dispose of property. Although I haven't seen it done, in my years in the legislature, when Representative Hackbarth was chairing the committee, and we had the same type of thing, we had agreement on all of the parcels, as we do today, that are in the bill, notwithstanding the amendments.
Representative Simon. Well, I just want to clarify, when you say agreement, you mean agreement with the DNR.
Chair, that is correct.
Okay. Thanks.
On that point, Representative Riccobina.
Representative Simon, I think a couple of years ago, and then Chairman Cypress Bill, there was a mandate to with the Department of Administration to that state land to bring in money.
And Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to Representative Seifert's point on page 1, and just for full disclosure, I am an appraiser and I am on the DNR's approved appraisal list. So, but that said, I think Representative Seifert makes some good points, and there's some, I think it's something we ought to look at as we move this to the floor. I'm not prepared to do an amendment today. Number one, I think he's right on the de minimis level. We should look at that, whether 100 is right or if it should be 50 or something less than 100. But then as you look at 1.4 and 1.5, I think is where I have probably the most questions. The commissioner shall make the determination based upon available information, including, but then it says, but not limited to. So what it does is really, as Representative Seifert said, allow the department to set their own price based on really nothing at that point. They need to look at these things, but then they can make a determination. I think it would be better if the department would make the determination based on, number one, the assessed value. Go to the assessor, get the assessed value. That could set the price. Number two, a sale price of that land. If you have sold it within a year or have a bill of sale, that would be certainly a set price. Number three, I think, is a problematic one that I would delete because, again, now you're making a judgment on what's a comparable sale within. Or number four would be good if someone has an appraisal from the last year. So one, two, and four would certainly be valid reasons for the department to sell that piece of land at that price. Beyond that, though, it's really, again, actually giving the department the right to negotiate, but they could negotiate for much higher than the land would be worth. And again, if you're a steward of the public dollars, that's not a good thing. If you're the landowner, it could be a good thing. So I think we do need to continue exploring that section a little bit and maybe tighten it up just a hair.
Okay, Representative Westbrook.
Mr. Chair, on that provision that Representative Junkie and Seifert were talking about, first of all, I'm wondering, Representative Dill, maybe the DNR knows, but I had gotten an email from somebody, and I don't exactly know whose district it is. I think it might be Representative Moe or somebody up north. But somebody had some land, and the DNR was going to buy it from them, and it was like $8,000, 160 acres, and I couldn't believe the price was that low. But the point of their email was how the DNR wants them to pay for half the appraisal, and the appraisal was like $3,600. And so their email complaint was, you know, we're not going to pay half the DNR's appraisal cost, and we're only getting $8,000. If I might be off a little on the figures, but it was disproportionate. I mean, it was something that any logical person probably wouldn't agree to. I'm wondering if this appraisal provision being modified would help a situation like that. And maybe I'll ask my second question and somebody can answer it. The next section in the summary from the House Research is talking about changes. Well, answer my first question. I'm going to look. I got to look back at my notes here and for the second question.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Dill.
I think that the issue that Representative Westrom raises had to do not with a sale that would be under the minimal valuation acquisition provisions in Section 1, but it was a land exchange which requires a full appraisal. And in that instance, generally speaking, I don't know if that's the statute, but they share the cost of the appraisal to do a land exchange. So we are not talking the same kind of. Had the DNR been trying to buy the land outright, this minimal valuation process and using those minimum tools to arrive at the value would have helped that landowner. But under the circumstances, because it was a land exchange, they wouldn't be able to use this.
Thank you, Representative Dill. And just on that point, that issue, I remember looking at the appraisal cost and Representative Junkie, if that's the kind of money they're paying for appraisals on 160 acres of land, which seems like it'd be pretty easy to appraise, that's pretty good money. Most people don't pay 20% of that for an appraisal of land. But the second issue I wanted to ask about is the next, there's another section according to the bill summary that talks about the DNR not having to give the landowner their appraisal anymore. And why are we making that change?
Mr. Chair, well, we covered that a few moments ago. This actually allows it clarifies and allows for the department to share that information, because previously it was protected as non-public data under the Data Privacy Act, and this changes that. That was goes to Representative Cole's question originally in the committee as to whether this was a good thing or a bad thing for the landowner, and this is a good thing for the landowner because there was conflicting statutes. The taxpayer or the property owner's Bill of Rights said one thing, that they could share the information in an appraisal, and the Data Practices Act said they could not because it was classified as non-public. This brings together those things and allows for the department to share the information prior to them consummating the final agreement.
Okay. Thanks. Representative Clark?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question for Representative Junkie. Sounded like you wanted to take out the third thing in the minimal value acquisition line 1.19, or 1.21, excuse me. I'm just trying to understand what that means, because I know just in buying a house, that's what they do. They look at three or four or five different properties and compare them, and then they arrive at an appraisal. It just seemed like that would be kind of standard. I didn't understand why you thought that should come out, other than that some judgment, but it seems like that's the whole point, is to have somebody look at comparable lands and make a judgment. I don't know. I'm not an appraiser, and if you are, then maybe you can say why that's not good.
Mr. Chair, again, the reason you just stated that it should come out as an appraiser should make that judgment whether it was a comparable sale. It'd be like you having a two-bedroom Rambler and comparing it to a four-bedroom ranch next door and saying, well, a house next door sold, and so that should be the price of mine. That similarly, there's different pieces of land that the DNR is buying, depending on if there's wetlands or woods or if it's agriculture land. And just saying that there was a sale in the neighborhood, a land sale, bare land sale, doesn't necessarily qualify it as a similar land sale. So you're actually moving into the realm of appraisal judgment at that time, and you should have someone who's licensed or qualified to make that judgment. And that was my suggestion, why three. All the rest of them are already predetermined. Appraisal has been done. The piece has been sold, or you have an assessed value, which is an appraised value, too, through the assessment process. All those are very qualified already. Number three isn't very qualified, and it can, again, becomes a judgment on either the landowner or the DNR, and not necessarily in the scope of an appraisal judgment.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark.
You may be right. I just see that it does say comparable land. It doesn't say, you know, similar or something that's different, two bedroom versus four. It does say comparable. So that's fine. I'll leave that to those of you who are appraisers to figure out.
Representative Pepin, and then we do have some amendments. I think after Representative Pepin is done, then we'll move to amendments. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dell, I'm just curious about the section 21, private sale of surplus state land, Hennepin County, on page 14 and 15. It talks about Township 120 North, and it gives some specific locations. I live in Hasson Township, which is the only township in Hennepin County, so I'm curious as to what exactly, where this is at. Could you provide me with that? I want to be sure my house isn't being sold without my knowledge.
Mr. Chair, I'll have Ms. Lewis, that's a technical question. I'll have Ms. Lewis answer that.
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a property in the city of Champlin, and this is property that was conveyed to the DNR for wild game reservation purposes. The city has grown up around the parcel, and hunting is not allowed anymore because of the residential area. A proposal would be to convey it to a local unit of government to maintain it as open space. It would have a reversion to provide it would revert to the state if it's not open for public purposes. So it would honor the general conveyance that occurred over 40 years ago, but it would remove it from the state management.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. How about the second one on 15? And I was thinking, what exactly is Township 120 for the first question? And then the second one is the land bordering the public water in Hennepin County. If you could just tell me what that is.
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, members, the Township 120 is the township in that Champlin is located. So that's the reference to Township 120. In Section 22, this is 1.9 acres of acquired land that borders Hayden Lake. And this was a site that was purchased but never used for a water access line. And so the idea would be to convey it again to local unit government, but provide that it reverts to the state if not used for a public purpose.
That's Champlin as well?
It's near Champlin, correct.
Okay, with that, we will move to amendments, and the first amendment is an author's amendment. It would be A070844. The chair moves the amendment on behalf of the author, Representative Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has to do with severed minerals, I'm going to have Ms. Lewis explain it. It's fairly technical, has to do with some lawsuits that occurred in the past years, and so I'll have her explain it. It has to do with the conveyance of ownership of several minerals.
Madam Chair, thank you. Just to step back for a second, the severed mineral interest law in Minnesota has been enacted in 1970 to solve the problem of obscure and fractionalized mineral records, not being of record. Mining companies could not find the owners. This is also an interest escaping taxation. And the basic law was upheld through the court system. And over the years, people have been filing severed mineral interest statements that they don't pay the tax. The interest forfeits to the state and trust for the taxing districts. What we had recently in the last 2 years was a court case involving Planco. It was a Pillsbury Land Company interest. And the Court of Appeals identified that there's an ambiguity in the severed mineral interest law that probably arose over the years due to the different amendments that occurred. And it got into was, does this proviso amend this proviso or not? And so we said, this is the legislature, the correct forum to decide how the law should read. And so what we're doing here is saying that under the amendment that we proposed in our original bill, we said we want to make sure that if you transfer the interest again and you don't comply with the severed mineral interest law for registration, the interest will forfeit. Severed mineral interest owners, several of them have come forward since the bill was heard in other committees and said, well, we're concerned about it because, quite frankly, they haven't been complying with the law. I said, well, this change in law will not be retroactive, and so the amendment language you see here is to provide them the comfort that the law is not retroactive, that they, again, get to start forward from this point in time and have to keep registering their interest when they transfer ownership. But for this period of time that they have not been complying, they're going to be okay. So that's the purpose of the amendment before you today.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Representative Westrom.
So, Ms. Lewis, if I understood what you are saying, in the future, any property that's sold, if the owner is going to keep the mineral rights, they have to transfer at the same time or else you lose them?
Madam Chair, members, it's only if you own mineral rights separate from the surface interest. And the state law has required since the 1970s that every owner of severed mineral interest to file a statement in the county recorder's office and they're subject to payment of an annual tax of 40 cents an acre. What this law does is, and that law, the court agreed that everybody has to file a severed mineral interest statement when that occurs. What the appellate court said this last year was that it was not clear in the statutes that forfeiture would occur for failure to comply with the law. And so what we're doing is saying that forfeiture will occur for failure to comply with the law.
So, Ms. Lewis, a lot of property sold right now with and mineral rights aren't included. How does the owner get the mineral rights included in their property sale?
Madam Chair, members, if mineral rights have been severed from the surface ownership, mineral rights are recognized by the courts as a real property interest. It can be transferred separately. If you want to put the mineral rights back with the surface ownership, you have to go purchase those rights from the mineral owner if they are a willing seller. If the state of Minnesota owns them, the state does not sell its mineral rights. That's provided in the Constitution and different statutes. So once the state owns it, it is state and state ownership for the benefit of the public.
So, Mr. Chair, Ms. Lewis, there's no way for a landowner to get their mineral rights anymore. Because if the state owns them, the state will not sell them?
Mr. Chair, members, a good portion of mineral rights are owned by the people who own their land. It depends on the area of the state if the mineral rights were severed from the surface ownership. But in the early days of statehood, mineral rights were transferred with surface ownership from the federal government and the state. So in the southern part of the state, central part of the state, the mineral rights are usually with the surface interest. This is more common in northern Minnesota and parts of central Minnesota.
All right, thanks.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion on the author's amendment? Hearing none, then all those... I'm reminded, Ms. Novak, I guess we have a technical change, if you could mention that to the committee.
Mr. Chairman and members, on the amendment, page 1, delete line 11. That's an unnecessary change of a section number.
Okay, I'll incorporate that into the amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Westrum, you have an amendment H0904A1.
I do, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, would you want to move that amendment like you moved the previous amendment?
Thank you.
No, you're a member of the committee.
I'll move the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I've talked with Representative Dill about this issue, but I know different members have these issues come up from time to time, and Representative Anderson, this is similar to the bill he introduced this year, but it would deal with a non-conforming lot along a lake that, Mr. Chair, but for the fact that the owners might be related, father and a son, a mother and a daughter, or a family owns both lots and they're called what would be legal non-conforming, they have more restrictions because they're related or the same person owns both lots than if two separate persons owned the lots. In some cases, Representative Vandeveer had an issue raised last year. And my district have had these issues pop up once in a while. And the persons that own them aren't able to build a house, aren't able to do things with their lake lot that others would be able to do if another third party owned them. And so this would clarify that just because of a related owner can't be a discriminatory method of zoning and disallowing things to happen on the property versus if two non-related persons would own the same two parcels of land. Representative Rukavina, I think you've had issues like this up in your area, and Mr. Chair, I would ask members to support this. It's time we try to get this dealt with and not discriminate against people just because their son or daughter may own the land or the parents might own both pieces of land and want to let the son or daughter build next to them where a non-related person would be able to. And that's it, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had Mr. Locksmo from the Director of Waters come to speak about this, and so I'd like for him to talk about it first, and then I'll share with you some of the conversation that Representative Westrum and I have had over the provision.
Yeah, we generally have expert witnesses for questions, but if we open it up, Craig, I think it's Craig Larson from the League of Minnesota Cities, was that the name?
Johnson.
Wanted to comment as well. So if you could be very brief, theory being that most of these issues are supposed to be flushed out in the vision, go ahead and identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Kent Lacusmo, Director of DNR Water Studio. This issue has been bouncing around the last couple of years. In this session, we committed to several members to work with this issue over the interim to develop a solution, because what we need are some standards that go along with this. We're talking here about the potential to develop very small lots, and our concern from DNR is in shoreline areas. And we've seen proposals of allowing development on lots of 8,000 square feet or less. And this year, in some of the divisions, we heard about the need to be more aggressive on pursuing new shoreline rules. This is a big step in the wrong direction. This bill, as written, deals with much more than shoreline. It deals with all lots in a county or city. So we've committed to address this issue over the interim. We think there are some provisions. Counties have tools available to them to address the non-conforming lots, and we have to have standards dealing with what are the minimum sizes that should be allowed.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Johnson wanted to comment as well, if he could be brief as well.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. I can be very brief. We have not had a discussion in committee of this bill concept yet this year. It has been an issue of discussion the last couple of years. And as Mr. Lacusmo said, this does raise concerns. The Association of Minnesota Counties, the Minnesota Association of Townships, and the League of Minnesota Cities all share the same concerns on this. It does affect much more broadly than just shoreland. But even in shoreland cases, often the only way we have to address issues of nonconformity where we have septics or setbacks or other problems we need to deal with is if there's common ownership of the adjoining nonconforming lots. In non-shoreland areas, this could be issues in a community with small lots where the city has realized they don't have enough room for septic systems anymore in a small town. They now need to try and get some of these lots to be in a conforming nature for septics or for setbacks from other buildings for fire safety, and this would prohibit us being able to do that if the lots shared common ownership, which the obvious point of nonconformity is to try and get these lots to meet with the coding and safety issues other lots already need to meet. So very much appreciate if we could take the time over the interim to discuss how to do this in a more flexible manner that actually addresses the specific concerns of the author. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You referenced the counties, if they had something they wanted to add. Nothing to add. Okay. Very good. Any further discussion? Representative Hollis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dill, and I know Mr. Lacusmo stated that he wanted to work on this over the interim. Yeah, this has been a problem and issue in my district for a long time, and we've brought forward bills. I think Representative Moll may have done that, and my senators have done it. What's silly about this whole rule and the way it's set up is that you have one specific lake. A couple bought three large lots, or 50-foot or 60-foot lots. They built a cabin in the middle lot. They then built a home to retire there, and their nest egg and their savings were the two adjoining lots. But the wife or husband inadvertently would put all three lots in the husband's name and consequently could not sell an adjoining lot or build on it. But if you go across the lake, that couple may have put one lot in the wife's name, one in the husband's, and then the other one again in the wife's name, so they weren't adjoining by the same owner. And there, they could sell the lot, build a home, and that was the only reason they could build a home. And the only reason they couldn't build a home is because the lot was in the same name. I think it's a very silly rule or law. It needs to be changed, and maybe if it's changed in a way that it still protects the environment, maybe put some restrictions on it when it's changed. Representative Dill, would you give us your commitment that you will work on this over the interim and you will bring the DNR in and we can finally solve this, because as Mr. Locksmo said, we'll work on it during the interim. I recall that conversation 3 or 4 years ago, Mr. Chairman, so it's kind of like we get that all the time. We're going to work on it, and we never actually do work on it or finish it, so I would hope Representative Dill could commit to that.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Representative Westrum, Representative House, I ask for Representative Westrum to author a bill on this very subject. I do am sensitive to the problem. It's happening on the lake where I live. It's happening on many lakes. It's happening in areas that I don't even know about. But we need to have some time to flesh out and to understand the nuances and the dynamics of the problem before we go off headlong into trying to solve it here in an amendment form at one of the last hours of the bill before it's taken action on the floor. And I did promise Representative Westrum, in full disclosure, that we would move forward on it in terms of hearings and in terms of any other actions necessary in the coming legislature. I've had this same problem, and I'm now in a position that I can direct a bit more than I could in the past how this will play out, I'll do exactly as the representative House suggested.
Okay. With that, we do have two or three other people that want to comment. Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I'll speak last. I'll pass till the others.
Oh, okay. Representative Martin.
I'll pass.
Representative Rukavina.
I'll pass.
Representative Westrum.
No, Mr. Chair. I like Representative Howes, I've heard the same thing. I will study it, we'll do it. And that's the common practice for all these groups to, or the DNR, to just pass the buck till next year. And maybe we aren't going to like what the DNR comes up with or the groups, because it seems like their interest often is to take away the property owner's rights or nest egg or investment. And in some cases, they're just stealing this land because the same person owns it. And if two people, non-related, owned it, they could do any. They could build a house. They could do things. So, Mr. Chair, this is a serious issue. The reason I would ask members to put it on is it might be the only way we get people a little more serious about studying and doing something with this issue if it starts moving forward. Right now, they seem to think it's no threat at all, and as long as they can keep stealing the property rights of our constituents, whether it's along a lake or not. But this is the way lots were developed, and they were conforming sizes at the time. If standards change in the future, we shouldn't take away somebody's rights that 10 and 20 and 50 years ago was the standard. That's just the way life is. There's grandfather clauses all over the place, and the fact that we take these property rights away from people after they own the land just because they're the same person and related to themselves is just wrong. And I appreciate the DNR saying they're committed, and I certainly appreciate Representative Dill, and I trust Representative Dill to deal with this. But I think we could help give Representative Dill even more oomph if we would pass this amendment and get the parties that are opposing this and implementing these laws more serious about the fact that they're stealing people's property rights and not having to pay for them.
Okay, we've had a couple of other hands go up. Representative Westrum, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope we would take Representative Dill's comments to heart. He has made an offer. He has not been in a position before to do anything, so I think that's it's a reasonable offer. And I am troubled by the language of stealing people's property rights. One of the big issues here, members, that we all have is if somebody can't have a septic system and wants to put a septic system, we all know we have these huge problems with septic systems polluting our lakes. So that's another way of impinging, and I'm not going to say the word stealing, on somebody else's property rights if you are a person polluting a lake that a whole bunch of people would like to enjoy. So I think there are multiple issues here. This is not a simple problem, and I don't think we should play games and say, let's try to move it forward. Let's recognize it for the complexity it is and take Representative Dill up on his offer and not put this amendment on this bill at this time.
Okay, Representative Dill, if you could comment, and then we'll vote. Representative Dill.
Well, on the bill previous, with regard to having the DNR leading the charge and driving the ship, the DNR didn't want the amendment that Representative Rukavina put on, but the legislature put it on. This committee put it on the bill. And we don't always do it. In fact, in my district, if you vote against the DNR, you get more votes. So we don't always do what they want just because they happen to be coming up with information. And I think that this committee, this legislature, will decide this issue, not the department. We'll use them as a resource, and we'll move forward with looking at that next summer.
Mr. Chair.
Representative West.
I would just solicit Representative Rukavina's insight. I've heard positive comments from you, Representative Rukavina, and I'm looking for your advice. You think I should withdraw this amendment and work forward that way? Should we try to vote and see if we could get it on? Representative Rukavina, give me some of wisdom.
Representative Rukavina.
Sure. Representative Westrom, incite. I'd like to incite a riot, but I'm a little disappointed that this issue's been around 4 or 5 years, and then we hear we'll work on it in the interim. And I think, I don't know, I just took a little nuance there from the chair that if you vote against the DNR, it's going to help them. So I'm going to vote against the DNR and vote with you.
All right, Mr. Chair, I'm ready for a vote.
Okay, Representative Howell's hand went up, I guess. Representative Howell, and then if we could please vote.
Yes.
Okay. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion fails.
Division.
Division has been requested. All those in favor of the amendment, please raise their hand.
Corey, you've got 20 hands up at least.
I put up my
Okay, those opposed? Being 14 yeses and 13 noes, motion carries. Representative Rukavina has the next amendment, A070843. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, this is a land exchange on school trust land. It's an industrial site located on the north side of the city of Virginia. The owner owns the building, and of course the land is sitting on school trust, and this, I've worked with the DNR on it. The language is from Ms. Lewis, and it just allows for a land exchange with St. Louis County, so it can be, then the owner would own the land. Appreciate your support.
And we have Representative Rukavina, the same issue we had in an earlier amendment. We don't need the reference on line 1.13, so we need to, members, remove that from the amendment. Representative Rukavina incorporates that change in the motion.
Mr. Chair.
Any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill.
Good to go on the amendment. Department's fine. I'm fine with the amendment.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We have amendment, another one by Rukavina, A070653.
Mr. Chair, this deals with land owned. Mr. Chair, I move the amendment.
The amendment has been moved. Representative Rukavina.
And Mr. Chair, the DNR has asked me to make a oral amendment here on line 1.8. Instead of, I would delete point of navigability and insert ordinary low water mark. And then what this does is the city of Gilbert had a public beach, which they no longer have, on this lake, which is on the southwest part of the city, because now they have Lake Orbegon and an old mine pit, and the public beach is there. And so they were going to offer this land up for sale, but there was a dispute over fill that had been dumped in there, sand for a beach, and so this tries to solve the problem. And I don't know if the DNR is okay with this now with that change, but I appreciate your support so they can now sell the land.
Okay, Representative Rukavina incorporates that change in his amendment on line 1.8. Point of navigability struck and ordinary low watermark was inserted. So he's incorporated that in the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill.
And we're good to go on this one. The department's fine. I'm good with it.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. The next amendment by Rukavina again, A070861.
Well, Mr. Chair, this amendment sets up.
You want to move this one?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the amendment. The
amendment has been moved. Any discussion, Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate your votes. What it does is sets up an appeals board between the regular board of adjustment for zoning purposes in St. Louis County. I just had so many complaints. Representative Westrum, you wouldn't believe the complaints I've had about these boards, and I try to work and get things solved, and I ask the county lobbyists who I see walk in the room, and then I ask the county board members for help, and they all tell me they can't do anything because there's, you know, that Ms. Hayden evidently seems to be running the county. So this way I'm giving, because all the county commissioners say, geez, I'd like to do it. Yeah, it seems unreasonable what they're asking for, but we can't do anything. So this makes them the intermediary before a person has to hire a lawyer and go to court. Because I've just got so many complaints. And Representative Dill knows what I'm talking about. So I'd appreciate your support.
Okay, any discussion, Representative Paymar?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I'm just trying to see if my county or
wrong amendment.
My city, we have the right one here. So this 861?
Yeah.
Yes.
Would this impact the city of St. Paul?
No, Mr. Chair, it's 5,000 miles.
5,000
square miles.
City of the first pass.
Okay.
Oh, it would be the city of the first class. The only one you're saying, Representative Rukavina, that's impacted with that requirement is Duluth.
Is St. Louis County.
In St. Louis County, but it references city first class, and that would be just Duluth.
I checked the square mileage on all the other counties of the city in first class.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Paymar, did that answer your question? Representative Dill?
This amendment, it is true that we do receive a lot of complaints. As Representative Rukavina said, the county does oppose this. They've informed me that the county opposes it. That doesn't surprise me. And I don't want to be called Judas anymore, so I'm not going to speak anymore. To
Maybe you're thanking the chair for calling on you on that one. Okay, any further discussion?
I'll read between the lines, and as a chair, sometimes you're stuck sticking to a commitment of how you put the bill together, but you can't affect or change or help what happens in committee. And so I think Representative Rukavina's got a reasonable amendment here, and again, I think I don't want to kill your amendment by supporting it, Representative Rukavina, but I support it.
Yeah. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion defeated.
Oh, Mr. Chair, division.
Division has been requested. Okay, all those in favor, raise their hand.
You guys better smarten up there.
Opposed? If you could raise the note, you could raise your hand again. We've got a little discrepancy here. Okay, motion defeated, 13-13. We're having some foot fingers here. 14-13.
Mr. Chairman, in all honesty, my hand did go up late. Did staff catch that or not? I'm serious about that.
We voted twice, and it was 13 both times.
I voted yes. So my yes vote went up late, so I just want to make sure staff didn't raise my hand because there was something I was looking against.
Revote.
Well, being that it's such a tight vote, okay, all those in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand. Still 13. So, and we had some of the other ones.
I think Representative Jarlett didn't vote, so I know.
Okay, we have, that concludes the amendment. Representative Wagenius renews her motion that.
Mr. Chairman, just very briefly, Mr. Chairman, last night in taxes we had a discussion with Representative Rukavina about the Hockey Hall of Fame issue and finding a bill that might not get vetoed that he should attach that amendment to. So I think, Representative Rukavina, your best chance might be here. I thought you might bring that today. I would have supported you on that one, too.
I'll remember that, Representative Cole.
Representative Coles comes up with enough of his own ideas any coaching. Okay, all those in favor of the motion that House File 904, Second Committee Engrossment as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Next bill on the agenda is Representative Poppy's Bill 1420. Representative Poppy.
I'd like to move.
Representative Wagenius will need to move the report, but if you want to take... Okay, Representative Wagenius.
Yes, I'll move the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division report for House File 1420, First Committee.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Poppy.
Thank you. I'd like to move House File 1420, First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Okay, Representative Poppy, if you could explain the bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1420 will clarify the licensing requirements for professionals working with subsurface sewage treatment systems in Minnesota. It will clarify who is licensed to work on small and medium-sized on-site wastewater treatment systems. These systems are used to treat and safely recycle wastewater from individual residences and small groups of homes and or businesses in areas not served by large centralized wastewater treatment plants. It does not preclude local units of government from adopting additional requirements, and the department can absorb any costs associated with the report. It is something that was passed out of environment policy to the General Register. It got mistakenly sent to Environment Finance, so from Environment Finance it was also sent to the General Register, but because it's in Finance, it came here. So I'm just hoping it can go to the General Register, and thank you. I can describe any more, but it's a good bill. It takes care of a lot of straight pipe sewer systems that many of us have in our communities that we need to deal with. We need to be able to have people be able to come and do the work to get better systems in place for individual sewage treatment systems, and so that's what we'd like to do.
Thank you, Representative Hollis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Poppy, will this take care of all the emails I'm getting from my contractors that claim someone down here is trying to create it so only engineers can design this?
Thank you very much, Representative Hollis. Mr. Chair, yes. This is actually the intent of the law that was established in 1994, seems to allow for this, but we're just trying to clarify that.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Poppe, is there anything in this bill that deals with enforcement of when a design system is put in place and it fails, that there's an enforcement to go out after and provide some kind of penalty for not following code or anything like that? Or is this basic
there
license?
There is not. Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, there is not.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Representative Poppe explained why it's here. So, okay, all those in favor of the motion that it be recommended to pass and placed in the general register, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Next bill on the agenda is House File 2068, Representative Yarles.
Mr. Chairman and members, this bill is simply going to Ways and Means Committee.
Representative Yarles, I skipped Representative Kahn, but we'll stay with yours for a moment. Yarles.
I move that the Minnesota Heritage Finance Division report for House File 2068 be adopted.
The motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Yarles?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment, too, but it's simply to technical one to reflect what was done in the Minnesota Heritage Finance Committee. This bill is my original bill that we're trying to send to Ways and Means to just hold it in case finance bills fall apart. I'm told by Chairman Solberg that he wants a bill in his committee from our committee.
Okay, we have a need. Representative Yarles moves that House File 2068 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Yarles then moves the amendment H0268DE2. That motion is before us. Any discussion on the Yarles amendment? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There,
just trying to get caught up in the paperwork.
I'm trying to remember last night in Texas we did something about the film. Brooke Avina's not here. Yes.
That was, Mr. Chairman, Earhart, that was a credit bill that the was adopted, an amendment to give him 15% credit. A lot of states do that, and it was in order to attract more filmmaking in Minnesota.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, Representative Hart?
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Any further discussion on the bill? Then Representative Yarles renews his motion that House File 2068 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We'll now revert back to Representative Kahn's bill. Representative Kahn.
Chairman, I move that House File 1638 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. This is again the same as Representative Yarosu. So this is in the state government finance report, and we want to put some more bills in Ways and Means in case we need them. I think maybe also a bill traveling separately in the Senate. There's an amendment to the bill.
Yes, the same as the Yarles amendment. Yeah, Representative Kahn, you move the amendment.
The amendment that would put the bill in the same order that it is in the state government finance.
Okay, and that's H1638A3. So Representative Kahn moves the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Oh, it's being passed out. We'll wait a moment then.
It's
identical.
It changes the appropriation from a blank to an appropriation and give you a letter of funding.
Yeah, with the exception of the appropriation, yeah. It's the same, and the appropriation is $125,000. Yeah. Just waiting for everybody to be sure they've got the amendment. Okay, everybody has the amendment. Okay, all those in favor of the con amendment that H1638A3 be recommended to or be adopted indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Kahn then removes her motion, or removes, renews her motion. It's been a long day already. House File 1638 be recommended to pass as amended. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, why was it being Representative Kahn removing this bill?
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, people might think that there may be some problems with some of these bills. I don't know why anyone thinks there'd be a problem with that, though, because I think they might need a vehicle in ways and means.
We're parking something sort of like
that. Yes.
Yeah. And Representative Kahn has been very upfront about that.
I wasn't going to, but since Representative Yarrow said I was
okay, any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. With that, we've completed the agenda for today, and we'll be meeting again tomorrow morning. The meeting adjourned.